You said the top of Kuf Samachad and Aleph, how to do that. Gemara's continued. Here the Gemara is going to go through each piece, little pieces of the Mishnah. Over there it says the first item that the Gemara is going to discuss is Ba'al Notein Tzchar, that the husband has to pay for the outlays with regards to the get and the shovar. My time. Why is the husband responsible for the paying for it? Damar Kroak also says V'katav V'natan, that he will write it and then he will give it. Now if he can't write it, he's got to get the sofer to write it on his behalf, so that the sofer becomes his agent. And if he's going to hire the sofer to do it instead of himself, he's got to pay him. So basically today we don't do it this way. Why not? Because Shadua Rabbonan Aisha Keheche Deloshaye, that we Rabbonan said to the woman to pay for it, so that it does not become an ikuv in the receipt of the get or in the production of the get by the husband. We don't want the husband to hold out on the woman and not give her a get because he's got to pay for the get itself. So we say to the woman, just pay for the get, and that way you're sure it's going to get done, and you won't be become an aguna. All right. And the who writes the shtar? Who pays for the shtar? Here, the love pays for the shtar, because the love is the one getting the benefit of the loan. So since he's getting the benefit of the loan, he's the one that pays for the shtar halva. So Gemara says pshita. What else would you have thought? Why should you think the malveh should write the shtar? Says l'sricha beiska. It's not always clear that it's just a loan. It's a case where they had a business transaction, a partnership of sorts. I've seen these before in Baba Metzia, where half the money is given as a loan, half the money is given to invest on his behalf, and they split the proceeds of the both of the upside or the downside. So that's called an iska. So in an iska, even though the loveh, the recipient of the money, is to invest partially as a loan, but it's also to the benefit of the notain. The notain has some benefit here. Nevertheless, the loveh, the borrower, still pays for the shtar. Kotvim shtar
mocher, afal pishen al keachimo. There's a business between the malveh and the loveh. The loveh comes and says, I want to write this shtar that's mechayev the malveh in losses. And we do that.
Right. Now, it's a good question, because it also bothered me when I was reading it. Here, we're not discussing the part about the malveh and the loveh and who can write without whom. There is a loveh document. The Gemara wants to know that the loveh, the debtor, always pays for the document. Gemara goes, okay, why would you have thought otherwise? I mean, why did the Mishnah have to tell us that the loveh pays for the document? The answer is that there are certain instances where, even though the loveh, the debtor, is not the only beneficiary of the document or of the transaction, nevertheless, the obligation is still on him to pay for the document. So I'm not sure, I don't think it affects the earlier statement about the malveh and loveh and writing with that. If it's anything for the chovav, the malveh, you can't do that. All right, now, next case is by a mocher and a lokeach. So there it says, kotvim shtar lemocher afa pishin lokeach imo, and who pays for the shtar? The lokeach pays for the shtar, pays for the document, because the lokeach is the beneficiary, and therefore he will pay for the shtar. Like Mark said again, pshito. He's selling the field because it's so bad. He's happy to get it off his hands. So here the seller has some advantage in the sale going through, and therefore we'd say maybe he should be obligated to pay for it. And then we say, Kamash, well, I know that the seller always, you never want to be a seller, you always want to be a buyer, and the seller's remorse. So we say that it's still, even though it's been pnei ra'ata, still to the benefit of the lokeach in the end, and he'll pay for the documentation over here. Again, by shtarei erusin, who pays for it? It's the chatan notein ha-sachar. The groom pays for it. So Gemara says pshita. So lo tzricha da'afilu tzumri derabonon denech le lechamu lekrovei. So generally, right, we say that the groom is the one getting all the benefit here. He's got a wife now. He's going to take her in. It's a simcha for him. So therefore, he should write the documents and he should pay for the expenses. They say, well, there's certain instances where the bride's family are as happy or even happier about the marriage. And that's a case where she's getting married to a young Talmud Chacham, so it's a big yichus for her. And therefore we think maybe the bride's family should pay for it. In that case, you say, no, kamash v'lon, it's always the groom, it's always the chatan that makes the outlays for the shtarei erusin.
Why don't we say, first of all, we could say maybe the pasuk of ki kafi shisha. But on the other hand, we have the Gemara says in Kiddushin, Tavle Beit Avtal Dumei Met Avami. It's more in her interest to get married than it is his.
Right. But he's the active one in the Kiddushin, and he's the one who does the Kiddushin. And therefore we're going to say to him that he's got to pay for the documentation of everything surrounding the Kiddushin, I would assume. Right. Now, Ein Kotvim Shtar Risut VeKavlanut. Again, here, who pays for the sharecropping agreement? That is the sharecropper himself, not the owner of the field, but the sharecropper. Where it says Pshita, that's also simple. Lo, Tzricha Bebura. That's a case where the field has to be left fallow for the next year or two, and therefore the sharecropper doesn't get any value. In the first year or two, the sharecropper is going to get nothing because he can't work the field. After it's laid fallow for 2 years, then he'll get some benefits. You would think over here that maybe the landowner should also have to contribute or should be the one who pays for it. Kamashmalan, again, that it's the sharecropper who pays for it. Ein kotvim mishterei berurim ele bidat shnehem. You can't write the shter berur except from both of their knowledge. My shterei berurin. What's a shtar berurin? Achata gemiru shterei tanato. It's the claims of the litigants. So litigants come to court, the stenographers write down what they say, and then they hand the ta'anot of these individuals to them and to the dayanim. So the dayanim are going to judge the case or adjudicate the case based on what's in these documents, and they deem have evidence to what they said and what the other party said in the case. But now they can't, once they've done it, they can't change what they've said, they don't add any other information, it's what's written in the document is their claim. Now, Shtar Berurim comes from a Gemara that we come up in Sanhedrin that we're going to speak about the called Zav law, that choosing of the Dayanim by the litigants. That each litigant picks one Dayan, and those two Dayanim pick a third Dayan to be the Machriya. So, the three Dayanim, this Zebor L'Echad, Zebor L'Echad, that we write down. That's a Shtar Berurim, that agreement that the both parties will agree to these Dayanim, and those two Dayanim will pick a third Dayan. That should be documented somewhere, their agreement to go to arbitration in this way, or to have the case adjudicated in this way, should be documented. You write two documents, and you give it to each one of them. Let's say that they're arguing about Kofima Midat Stom. What's Midat Stom? Midat Stom is that Nenev is Lo Chaser. It's a benefit of one individual, not to the detriment of the other individual. Or we say, why not? Why not do it? So one of them believes yes. Umar Savar ain't kofin. One says that we don't kofin amidat stone. Which is which? So this is would be the opposite of what I would have thought. I would have thought that Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, right, is the one who says kofin amidat stone. That's why we forced them to have two documents. And because what's the big deal? You have two documents. And the Tanakhama is the one who says that you only have one document, and ain't kofin amidat stom. The Rashbam reads it just the opposite, exact opposite. He says, Reb Shimon Gamliel Omer, ain't kofin amidat stom. What does it mean, ain't kofin amidat stom? We don't force them to join together in one document. That if you write one document, then they each have to put up half the expense of that single document.
Now you have to put out the whole
expense. Right, so now you have the whole expense. So that's what we say, ain't kofin. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says we don't force them to join together and only pay for one contract. We allow them to. He can say, "I don't want to pay for one contract. I want to have my own. I want to have my own copy." So he's allowed to opt out and say, "I want my own copy of the shtar and not put the money in." But we, the Tanakham, says, "No, kofin on me that stone. What do you care if it's all in one document? Why do you need two different documents?"
Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, there's no midat stone here. He just says, and that I have a document for my
right, so I would have thought, this is just me thinking in the modern day, that everybody having a copy of the shtar is something nice, or having a copy of the tanot is something that's good. Like today you would never think of saying that, oh, let's put one copy together and leave it. No, you want to have it, each one of you wants a copy of the documentation so you can read it, you can look it over, right, your lawyers can see it, but everyone wants their own copy. But here's the opposite, that the natural course would be for them to share in a single documentation, and the fact that you want to have two documents, and you want to pay for your own and have your own, all right, that's fine. So that's it. The Rishbam says, so Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is in kofin, amidat stom, and therefore you can say, I opt out and I want to have my own. And the Tanakhama says, no, kofin amidat stom. What's the benefit of you having your own document? There's no benefit to you, then put in the money with the other guy and have one copy of the document made. Where it says, "Lo, the kuli yama kofin." Everybody agrees you are kofin. I mean, that's them. But ach, I no time to b'shimu amelo damalei lo nechali to have zchutech gabe zchuti. I don't want your ta'anot written by my ta'anot. The damit alai ki ario arbo. You're like a lurking lion that's coming to eat me. So I don't. This is again a strange concept. But if you look in the Rashbam, that he says you have a document that has both their ta'anot in it, a single document, or do you have independent documents? Each one has its own ta'anot in it. So dami alai karei arba kosha'a shetirak tav. Every time you see the document, tavo elai balilut. You'll come to me and complain to me and say, "Well, look, I can't believe it. Ta'anotecha k'tuvim bo." Based on what you have written in there, you'll come and say, "Come on, look, look, look. You should be paying me." Sham tirei ta'anotai, and you also see my claims over there. Tavo liday. Miriva, and it'll cause us to have quarrels. Kish mirivota, that you are a person who is easily angered, quick to quarrel, and therefore I don't want my tanot and your tanot on the same page, because you're going to go look at that and it's going to get you all riled up again, and then you're going to come and bother me about it. So I'd rather you want to take your claims, take them home with you, and I'll take my claims home with me. So it's not a bother. Again, I'm not totally clear on what his issue is or why he's so upset about him having them on the one page. But here, the Gemara seems to indicate that it was more pleasant to him to have it on one page, and that's why Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is not kofin here, because there is zen and there is a chaser. There is a chaser by having them on one document. So therefore, it's no longer kofin midat stone. Even though Rabbi Shimon Gamliel would agree if there was an indifference here, if there was zen and if it was a lo chaser, we would say kofin. But here the case is zechaser. He's losing out because he has all the tanot documented on a single document, which will cause more fighting or quarreling after the fact. Okay, next Mishnah. Mi shipara. We've seen this Mishnah earlier. Before it was quoted in the Darim and Baba Metzia that someone who pays off a third of his loan. So once he pays off a third of his loan, one possibility is you write him a receipt for that portion of the loan. Or the other possibility is they don't want to have to expend money on putting up a new receipt. So what do they decide to do instead? They say, "Listen, we'll put the shtar with a third party, with a trustee. And he'll hold on to the shtar until you pay the rest." So that's what they do here. So this, then he places in safekeeping with the trustee the shtar. Im lo natati lecha mikan vadyom ploni. If I do not pay you, or I don't give you the money, right, until such and such a time, then tain lo shtaro, give him back the shtar. Higiazman, time came, velo natan, he didn't pay the remainder of the outstanding debt, he didn't pay it off. Rabbi Yossi Omer Yitain, this says the trustee should give the document back to the malveh, back to the creditor, and he can claim the full amount again. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, lo yitain, Rabbi Yehuda says you don't give it back to him. What are we afraid of? What's the machlokes about over here? Machlokes about whether asmachto is kanyo. So is asmachto kanyo or lo kanyo? So if you say that asmachto kanyo, then you say when he hands the loan to he hands the document to the third party, the trustee, and says, "Give it back to him when I don't pay you back." He believed that it could go back. He really believed that could happen. And he's kone b'cholavavo, or machne b'cholavavo, and he gives it over. Whereas the other opinion says it's makta lo kanya. He never anticipated not paying it back. The reason he offered this type of offer is because he wants them to believe him that he'll pay it back. He didn't intend to ever have to pay him the amount again. He just said, "Give it to this guy, and if I don't give it to you by this date, you keep the whole contract." He's trying to make it sound like he's for real, that he's really going to pay it off, but not that he really meant to give him back the contract. So that's why it says in my kamifla here, Biosi Safar Asmachta Kanyo. Yosi thinks that Asmachta is Kanya, and therefore he says, "Itain, give him back the document. That's what you agreed to. Those are the terms. Give it back." Asmachta lo Kanya. Asmachta is not Kone. Over here, the Rashbam gives a definition of what Asmachta is. You look, it's in the Mishnah. He says, "Hamavtiach l'chaverel davar amunach yaseh davar la'atid." Promises to do something to his friend based on the future. V'somech v'lo shatatznai. And he thinks at the time that he's making this condition, sh'yuchal l'kayem adavar. And he thinks that he can do it. He can take care of it. When the time comes, he'll be able to take care of it. But what ends up happening is that for some unforeseen reason, when it comes to the time, he's unable to do it or he doesn't do it. So now, how do we view that? Do we view that as being he made a commitment? If he made a commitment, he's got to stand by his commitment. Or do we say, no, that this commitment doesn't involve a kinyan, it's all premised on projecting an image of trustworthiness and not to really have to pay the money back, and therefore it's lo kanyu. Rav Nachman Amar Rabu Barabu Amar Rav Halacha ki Rabbi Yossi. The halacha is like Rabbi Yossi. Tosos has an alternative, or obviously the other girsa, which is ain halacha ki Rabbi Yossi. The halacha is not like Rabbi Yossi, and that's in order to reconcile with Rav Nachman Shitato here and in other places. And therefore, he wants to switch the girsa to read ain halacha ki Rabbi Yossi. After we already learned from Yochanan once, twice, number of times that the halacha is Rabbi Yossi, ani, what can I do? Meaning that I might have thought otherwise, but Rabbi Yochanan clearly told us that the halacha is like Rabbi Yossi, and that Esmachta is Kanye over here. And the Gemara concludes, Vein halacha Rabbi Yossi. Halacha is not like Rabbi Yossi. So now, what does it mean that halacha is not like Rabbi Yossi? I was trying to find the Tosfot that didn't come quickly enough over here. I'm sorry, but we've seen this before with Esmachta Kani. Here, Tosfot draws one of the distinctions or mentions some of the distinctions that he's mentioned in other places. And right, so we didn't see Sanhedrin yet. We saw Tosfot together that laid out the three positions of the different types of Esmachta that can be and the different din that would apply in those instances. So now the Tosfos, if you look over here, it says, "Bintaris rabbeinu tam, da'afilu lo kanya asmachta ba'alma." Then, even in general, asmachta ba'alma doesn't work. Bezu neshech, there's a case that kanya tvei. Over there, there's more reason to believe that it was kanya. Mishum da'asa lo tova, because he did something beneficial for him. Shelo ve'lo, v'gomer v'dato laknoto yoter, and therefore he really believes he's going to give more if something doesn't work out because he did something for him. But oh, the toughest malver. The creditor already has it in his hand. He's taken the money. He has the money already. He's got the money in his hand, so therefore he wanted to give back. So he says, Vein ani mevin, but he doesn't understand this, but he does uphold the idea that because of his toughest, that there's a different case. So that's one distinction Tosus draws over here. The next one is down towards the bottom that Tosus says, Eulish the mother of Huna, Shkolas machta shein dat kol echad ve'echad. That not each one of them doesn't really believe it's going to happen. Asmachta, but in omrim klal alasmich chaver al dvarav. Neither of them believe that it's really going to happen. The only reason he's saying it is to make him believable. He's not saying it because he really intends to ever pay it. Bal hatam. In the other case, inzal asmich al dvarav. Elagamri hilvau umenat shetishka biado im loy freu at shlosh shanim. So over there, he's making a statement, telling him what it's not about nimanut. He's telling him what's going to happen if he doesn't pay it back over the 3-year period. That will work for Rav Nachman. So Tosfos is starting to draw out conclusions or making exceptions. When does Esmachta Kanya? And when is Esmachta Lo Kanya? So Tosfos lays out a position in other places that the difference, there are three categories of Esmachta. It's one category where you have absolutely no control. You have zero control over what's going to happen. And then you have a transaction based on that idea that you have zero control. So over there, we say, Asmachta Kanya. Asmachta Kanya, why? Asmachta Kanya, because over there, you know for certain that it's out of your control. If you think you have no influence on the outcome, and you're still willing to enter into such agreement or make such commitment, then clearly you're doing it because you think it might happen or may not happen, but you're calling it b'cholibo, because you have no control over it. The other possibility is where you have no control, you have total control over it. You have the ability to affect the outcome of the situation. So where you have total control to affect the outcome of the situation, or it's up to you to determine the outcome of the situation, in that case we also say, Asmachta Kanya, that it works. Because you think it's in control, and you think you're going to be able to do it, therefore you say, I'm kone b'cholibo, I'm akne b'cholibo, because you think you're going to be able to handle the situation. So it says the area where it does not work, where Asmachta Lo Kanya, is this in-between case. It's a case where you think you have control over it, but it turns out that you really don't have control over it, or you have some sort of influence over the outcome, but not total influence over the outcome. So in those instances, we say that there the person is not gomer dat and makneh, because over there he doesn't really know how he's going to control it, or he doesn't really believe that it's ever going to come to this, because he thinks he can control it. And the end, when he can't control, and that's what the Rishbam described over here, this idea that he thinks he has the ability to affect it, and then at the end there's an onus which prevents him from affecting it or making it work out. So again, he thought he was in control, but it turns out he's not in control. So in those instances, we say Asmachta Lokanya. So Tosos narrows down the situation in which Asmachta Lokanya applies, even if you say Ein Alochik Rabbi Yossi. Like he says here, the Girsha should be, the Aloch is not like Rabbi Yossi, and therefore Asmachta Lokanya, and therefore Asmachta Lokanya. Asmachta Lokanya is only is unique to that case, but the other cases where Asmachta Lokanya is because there you have full control, or you have total lack of control. In those instances, we believe that you have made a full commitment to do it. Based on this, there's actually, it turns out, there happens to be machlokes of the Rambam and the Beis Yosef, had a pasuk when it comes to Asmachta Lokanya and Lokanya. And it has implications, for instance, like by gambling. By gambling, the Gemara says, gives two reasons over there why gambling makes you a pasul deidut. One is because Asmachta Lokanya and therefore it's a gezel. But the other reason is because eno asuk bishuvo shel olam. He's not involved in settling the world, doing positive, doing things that are positive for society. So the Shulchan Aruch paskins that Asmachta is Kanyo, and the problem by gambling is Ishuvo shel olam, that he's not asuk. If he has another profession, then he's fine. If he just does it as for entertainment, then it should be fine. Whereas the Rambam says, no, the Rambam says that Asmachta lo Kanyo. And the problem by gambling is also Asmachta Lokanya. The Nachtamina comes up for the lottery here in Israel. You play the lottery. Rav Yosef has a tshuva about the lottery here in Israel. And he says for the Bnei Ashkenaz, they can play the lottery. And the Bnei Sefarad cannot play the lottery because of that psak. Exactly that psak of Asmachta Lokanya versus Asmachta Izkanya. And so because of that, he recommends that the Sfaradim only benefit from the pious and not pay for the pious. And that the Ashkenazim should pay and put in for the feis, should buy tickets for the or can buy tickets for the feis. Next Mishnah. Mi shenimchak shtar chovo, mamid alav edim. Someone who has a document which was erased, or somehow it's starting to be erased, and he's not going to be able to use it anymore, he wants to preserve it. So then, mamid alav edim, he brings edim. Right? So now, the way the Rashbam reads mamid alav edim is that he brings edim who drew the kiyum. The edim themselves drew the kiyum in front of a beis din. These two edim who knew what was in the document or in the contract, they go with the document to beis din and they say, listen, this is what was written in it, this is what we want to write down, and they're mekayim the shtar based on that. These edim do the kiyum. Tosfos believes, no, that when it says, v'alifnei beis din, ma'amid alav edim, u'balifnei beis din, it brings the edim, and then you go to beis din is the one that's mekayim the shtar. The edim just got to testify what was in the shtar, but the beis din is the one who was mekayim what was in the shtar. As opposed to the Rashi, because it's the Edim themselves that are making what's in the star. Ba'osim lo kiyum, ish ploni ben ploni, right? We say that we make for him a kiyum that says, ish ploni ben ploni, this individual, nimchak shtaro biyom ploni, came before us and his star was erased on such and such a day, uploni, uploni edav. And these are the signatures to the document. These are the people who are chotem ala shtar. That's what the Rashbam. The Rashbam over here says that the Ploni Ploni is Hayu Edim Shechatumim Bo. Those were the Edim that were signed on the original Shtar. Whereas the Re wants to suggest this is the Edim that saw it. And when it says over here that Uploni Ploni Edav, Ploni Edav means the current Edim who saw what was in the Shtar, that's what it means. These so and so are there at the Edim. Not that so and so were the Edim on the original Shtar, but so and so are the Edim for the current Shtar that is, you know, rewriting what was in the erased shtar. Tarabano, ezu kiyumo. How do you do a kiyum? How do you write a kiyum of a shtar? So it says, "Bemotav flata havino." We were in front of three individuals sitting, three dayanim. Ano ploni uploni uploni. Right? We were sung these three individuals sitting around. Hotzi ploni ben ploni shtar machuk. This individual took out a document that was erased or nearly erased. Lefanenu biyom ploni uploni on such a day. Uploni edav, and these are the witnesses. Vim katabo. If he writes, who's got nulei duchel edim? We found the original edim. And we see that everything is true. These edim who are telling us what's written in the document, we have the edim who are signed the document, we find them and they tell us what was. In that case, he can collect from whatever the document is, you know, ends or terminates in, whether it's the.
That's the text, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then Yom Katubo, that's already the story. Now it's continuing.
No, Yom Katubo is also part of the Kiyum. Part of the Kiyum Ashtar, yeah. But it depends what. If they write in the Kiyum Ashtar the phrase, we found the original Edim, and we heard what they said, and they're testimony was clear, and not clear, but they verified what we had heard was in the shtar. Right. It confirmed what was in the shtar. He can use this shtar kiyum to go and collect with it. On the other hand, if that's not written in the document that they were able to check out the edim, then he's got to bring proof to everything that's in there. He's got to bring a proof that it's mizman rishon, that is from the original date of the first shtar, and he has to bring a raya on how much money, and a raya on anything else that was dictated in the shtar.
So what good is this kiyum?
The kiyum just says that the shtar was still there, so that if he can go via the rayot, then he has the shtar. Meaning that if he didn't have the shtar, right? If he didn't have a shtar, then he wouldn't have anything. He wouldn't be able to collect. Right? It's all baal peh then. Okay. Now nikra, if the shtar is ripped up, pasul. And it's pasul. But nitkara, if it got ripped, then it's kasher. Nimchak or nitashtesh, it was erased or became lighter or rubbed off. If you can still see the outline or the letters themselves, then it's kasher. You see that sometimes in a Sefer Torah, the ink comes off the letter, but you can still see where the letter was or where the form of the letter was. So over there, it's kasher. How do you know when something's torn? And how do you know when something got ripped? I mean, by itself. So then where it says, I'm going to review that it was ripped intentionally. That's kerasho bezdin. That's a rip of bezdin. Nitkara, that it was ripped by itself. It became, somehow tattered. Kara, kara she'ino sho bezdin. That's a rip that's not of a bezdin. Hey, chidami kerasho bezdin. What's a rip of a bezdin? So I'm going to makom edim, umakom azman, umakom atorif. You want it? They rip in all the places where the evidence is important. But on the edim, right? On the date. And in the Torah, in the core of the document where everything, the monies and everything is documented, the individual's document. So if you see that the document's intentionally ripped across all of those areas, then it's clear that someone wants to be posel the document. On the other hand, if it's ripped in places at the edges or where you wouldn't have suspected that it's a problem, then we don't worry. We think that it happened by itself. He didn't rip it intentionally. Or it wasn't ripped by someone else, that they're unable to collect with this. But you can't collect with such a star. By Amar Sheti Ve'erev. That it's when you have it long, if the shtar is ripped both along the vertical and the horizontal, both directions that it's ripped in, and that's called a kera, an intentional rip. Hanu Arvai, there were these merchants that were strong men. They were basically forcing people off their land and taking their land. And they were also, when they took their land, they were forcing them to write a contract, write over a sale document to them. So not only did they steal the land, but they also put pressure on them to give them the original contracts or to write them a new contract. So now, Atu Marvaito the Kameda Abaye, the owners of the land came to Abaye Armalei, the Chaze Mar Shtare, right, the first star, Lichtavlan Mar Shtar Achrina. They look at our star, write for us a backup copy of the star, Dimit Nis. If they come, these strong men come and take it away from us, chad naktinan, right? Naktinan, chad biyadan. We have one and they have one now, but we're able to prove that it's our land. The problem was that the Anasim were coming and strong-arming away the land, plus they were forcing them to give over the document that gave evidence that it was their land. So when they do that, they're now missing a contract. So what do they want? They want to buy to write a copy of their shtar.
That really belongs to them.
That really belongs to them, right? The original shtar. So now they can hand one shtar over to the strong men, and they can keep one shtar, and that will prove their original ownership over there. So now he says, what can I do for you? Can't write two documents of sale or two documents of milveh on the same single transaction or the same property, because what are we afraid of? He'll go mitoreif from the lekuchot, because listen, I got knocked out of here. It was sold to me with achrayut, so I'm going to go in and collect the monies that I want. All right, now he's discharged the obligation, so he says, let me have the document back. He gives him the document, rips it up. Comes back, 2 weeks later. He says, look, you owe me money. I have a document. He says, I ripped it up. He goes, no, you didn't. It's right here. So he takes that a second. I mean, now I got to take again. He's going to take money from the Lekuchot again. Here, we're really mostly worried about the Lekuchot buyers who bought after him, who he can go after by having the shtar
so
in place.
Ownership, these aren't titles of Mechira. These are actually loan document, collateralized loan document.
Right, or collateralized sales. You can have a collateralized sale also. If someone sells you a property with a guarantee that if the property gets taken away from you, they'll replace it, you can have it also over there. But right, something that involves some sort of guarantee, because then you're at risk. Have a Katar day, they, these individuals were putting a lot of pressure on Abaye. He told the sofer, go write them. You do the first part of the do the contract on an erased part of the cloth, and then you have the edim sign on a part that's not erased. The puzzle, because we know that's a shtar puzzle. So just go ahead, write them whatever they want, but just make it into a shtar puzzle. Maybe the original rishum will be nikar. We had that in our Mishnah, right? That if you could still see what the outlines of the items are, then you're allowed to rewrite the shtar. So what are we afraid here? We're afraid here he's telling them basically go write a regular contract, write for them whatever they wanted, have the sign on the bottom, but then go and erase the top part. So when you erase the top part and you fill in with something else, and then the signatures are at the bottom on the fine part, that's a pasul shtar. The fear is that he wrote an original contract that was good and then he erased it, but he didn't do such a good job erasing it. So when he didn't do such a good job erasing it, the rishumo will still be there and he'll erase the new writing on top of that. And now he has a shtar that has that documentation. He can take it to Beis Din, he can take it to Edim and say, listen, let's be mikayim the shtar, the rishumo nikar. Right, so that's what he says. So he says, "Me kamina shtar amalia." He says, "I didn't say to him to go and write a full-fledged shtar. Aleph beit bawa kamina. I said to create the makom hamachak. I didn't say write a regular shtar, erase it, and then write the shtar again. No, I said write. You just go and write some splotch it with ink, do something, then erase it, and then write the shtar because then you're writing into a cloth that's pasul, right? Because it's machuk, and the edim are not signed on the machuk; they're signed on the regular shtar, the cloth, and therefore will not be." It'd be a puzzle document.
You need to erase an original writing. Well, I think they just
scrape away, right? I guess it gave them some sort of guide, or that it was easier to know how deep to go. I don't know. It's a good question, right? Why you can erase without because it has a physical effect on the cloth, then you should be able to erase without writing there. It's a good question. Tana Rabbanan, Harei Shabav Amar Avad Shtar Chuvi. So he says, I lost my document, my documentation of the loan I lost. Afa pishamru edim anu katavnu v'chatamnu v'natnanu matananu lo en kodvim lo etashar. Even if we have edim that come and testify and say, we wrote it, we signed it, and we gave it to him, still we don't write for him such a shtar. But when's that true? B'shtari halva'a. And when it comes to loans. Afa b'shtari mekach u'memkar kodvim. Then, when it comes to shtar mekach mechum, we do write a duplicate copy, chutz min echarayut shubo, except the echarayut. What's the difference? By halva, there are two parties. If there are two parties, then it's to the detriment of one party and for the benefit of the other party to have this extra document floating around. So we're afraid that he comes and lies and says it's missing, and then we write him another document. Now he has two documents that he can use for claims. By the shtar halva, we say no duplicate copies because there's too much risk with the duplicate copy around. On the other hand, when it comes to Shtari Mekach HaMemkar, if you write two contracts, to whose benefit is it? To the one who already owns it. It's his property. You just write him another contract that it's his property. So go ahead. You want to write another property. As long as we have edut that this is true and that it is his property, we'll write it over for you. No problem. Chutz Me'achrayut Shebo. This all works except for the fact that you can't take on Achrayut in it. The Achrayut, we don't allow you to pass down, or you cannot rewrite that. So even though you can rewrite a Shtari Mekach HaMemkar, you have to leave out the Achrayut in the shtar mekach u'memkar, because otherwise you can run into problems of double collection, and he might be improving his rights now by giving the right to collect from mishubadim and to affect the lukuchot. Rishim Gamliel Omer, af shtari mekach u'memkar ein kotvim. Rishim Gamliel says, even documents of transactions you do not write down. B'chein ayer Rishim Gamliel Omer, notei matana l'chaveiro v'yachzirlo et eshtar chazera matanato. Rishim Gamliel says, if someone gifts a property or a gift to someone, and then they have a shtar that documents the fact that this gift was given, and then they give the shtar back to the original grantor of the gift. Shimon Gamliel believes otiot niknot mimsira. Otiot niknot mimsira means that you're able to give a document over to someone and transfer the rights that are found in the document to them. So here, that's what he's doing. When he hands the document back, the document was the one empowered him or gave evidence to the sale or the gift to him. If he hands that document back to the original grantor, the sale's gone, because he just basically handed back the gift to the grantor. Whereas the Chachamim omrim, matanato kayemet. His matana is good. Why is his matana good? Because we don't say, right? Odiot niknot v'sira. So therefore he can't. Even if he gives the contract back to the original owner, it doesn't change the fact that it's still outstanding, and he's not giving him any kinyan in the item. Amar mar chutz me'achrayut shebo. When you do write these items, you have to leave out the achrayut in all these cases so that we don't disadvantage anybody. In case he's not telling the truth here. My time, Amar Sar, Levishain Kotvim, Shtei Sharot, Ostachat. This is what we had the reverse after originally. Why don't you write a document achrayut? Because then you'll have two documents for the same transaction, the same loan. So that we don't let you do. Dumazil Bachov. Tarif lay the high, because maybe the creditor will go ahead and take away from this individual. Bazahai, umepig, chad, v'tarif lekuchot. And then what is he going to do? This individual is going back and take more property, give him more property, and then he'll go after the buyers afterwards. So the parmelay, the balchov, shofli, leave me alone, or give me some room, deikimba, that I can stand here. Vahadar, tatirfan, then we'll go grab away the property from the other individuals, umepig achrina. And then we'll place it with something else. Right? And then he'll go back again with a second document and go after the kuchot again, or other kuchot. So the Gemara's conclusion here is that we don't write the documents, so we don't write a second set of documents because we're afraid of him reusing the document or making claims that don't exist. Again, over here, the Gemara is suggesting that he partners up with the owner of the land or the party who was the debtor over here, they come up with some sort of agreement between them that he'll go and grab away land at first or take something to pay for it, and then he'll give it, he'll pretend that it's given back or he'll pretend that it's still there, and then he'll go after the other property as well. So then he'll have two chances to go after the property. We don't want that because there's too much risk involved in opening up the opportunities to the individuals to do as they please in these circumstances. So we don't let them do that, and we prevent that, or we prevent that problem by not writing documentation. And even where we do write documentation, we write it without achrayut, because then it doesn't do anything. A document without achrayut does not entitle you to go after the kuchot, entitle you to go after any other parties, and that's why it'll be fine. Okay, we'll stop over here.